Good morning, everyone. I will call to order the Thursday, February 13th, 2025, meeting of the House Commerce and Finance Committee. And since we will not be meeting, I want to go on the record right away. Tomorrow we will not be meeting. As we know, it's not a regularly scheduled day. I love this. Like, well, what's he going to say? Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
To all of our, well, Representative Davids. Oh, I don't have my gavel again today. I'm just going to check on eBay and see how the prices are going this morning. We do have a very important topic and a serious topic ahead of us today. And this is something that has evolved over the years. And we know, and all of us hear it and all of us experience it when we get our insurance premiums in the mail, that the cost of insurance has been going up and for various reasons. And one of the reasons that insurance tends to go up is because of fraud and fraudulent claims. And in the insurance industry, with the insurance companies and with carriers and with people who settle claims and in conjunction with the state and other regulators, we formed in the state of Minnesota what was known as the Insurance Fraud Investigation Unit. And that is housed in the Minnesota Department of Commerce, the regulator for insurance. And we learned earlier this year that by executive order, Governor Walz has taken those agents and those employees, as well as others that do fraud in other agencies that have jurisdiction, and has, by executive order, put those under the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And I'm listening to folks from the industry, listening to people around this table, listening to people in the legislature, both Democrats and Republicans. There is concern about moving that unit outside of the Department of Commerce because they are the chief regulator. They can issue licenses. They can take disciplinary action to take that agency and to take that unit out of the Department of Commerce and move it into a more general area under the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And so today, to give the committee some more background about that, we have a number of commissioners, and we also have some members of the industry who are going to testify. And so I literally am going to get started right away because some are on a time crunch. And our first testifier is going to be the commissioner herself, Commissioner Arnold. There she is. She moved sides on me when I came in this morning. And Ms. Arnold will visit with us about the history and talk a little bit more about the governor's executive order. Then we also have Commissioner Johnson from the Department of Public Safety and Superintendent Evans, who will also be sharing comments on here. And again, welcome to the committee. And we will go ahead and we will, Commissioner Jacobs, not Johnson. Bob Johnson used to be involved in the insurance. That's where I got the name Johnson from. So my apologies, Commissioner. With that, Commissioner Arnold, I'm going to turn it immediately over to you.
All right. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and Representative Hearn, members of the Commerce Committee. I congratulate you on your themed sweater today in advance of the holiday tomorrow. It's nice.
Commissioner, I'm just going to ask you if you can pull the mic a little closer and for all testifiers.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excuse me. So for the record, my name is Grace Arnold, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I'm here to provide an overview of the transfer of the Commerce Fraud Bureau, formerly Commerce Fraud Bureau, into the Department of Public Safety to create the new Fraud and Financial Crimes section. Before I speak to the transfer, I think Chair O'Driscoll kind of teed this up really nicely. Fraud is increasing, and there are all kinds of interesting ways in the most Minnesotan way that people are out to get money. And in the insurance industry is not immune from that, and that's why we have a longstanding commitment to making sure that we are addressing fraud in the insurance industry, because it is part of it's part of our kind of overall work to make sure that premiums are as affordable as possible in the circumstances that they can be. The Walz administration is committed to ensuring that there is a coordinated and comprehensive response to fraud in the state, and in particular against state government. And the Fraud Bureau is a nationally recognized in combating insurance fraud. Under this executive order, we worked together with DPS to create a unit that was focused on fraud and financial crimes generally, and then some of the specific charges are related to fraud in the state government. The Fraud Bureau was a law enforcement agency comprised of sworn peace officers and civilian staff who were tasked to combat insurance fraud, tackle financial crimes, and administer the auto theft prevention program. Annual funding for the former CFB, but I think that's we'll get into this, I'm sure, later, comes from an insurance assessment, a legislative appropriation from the Department of Labor and Industry that's related to workers' compensation fraud, an administrative fee to offset the costs of the auto theft program, and then a $1.3 million appropriation from the auto theft prevention grant program. The scope of those resources and the work is not going to change now that the CFB resides at the BCA within the fraud and financial crimes section. Insurance fraud is one of the nation's largest crimes. It's at least $308 billion or stolen every year, according to the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud. That occurs when individuals deceive an insurance company or an agent, or they try to obtain other money to which they're not entitled. When fraud is investigated in the insurance industry, these are often complex investigations that require a really high level of expertise, and usually it's beyond the scope or capacity of other law enforcement agencies. And so over the time, the Commerce Fraud Bureau collaborated with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies to apprehend those responsible for committing those crimes, and also supports local, state, and federal attorneys' offices to hold them accountable. I'll do a little bit of kind of an overview of what work we did at the CFB, and I'll just say that the skills that the agents have are really, really excellent and are really a really great addition to this larger unit at BCA. So last year, the CFB fielded 2,900 case referrals, mostly from insurers. So these are insurers who flag something they see in their claims, refer them on. Criminal investigations resulted from complaints of individuals who are responsible for committing crimes. We've estimated that was an economic impact to Minnesotans of about $35 million. So overall, crimes that were prosecuted had an economic impact of about $35 million. The largest areas of fraud within the insurance industry, as we saw them in the Commerce Fraud Bureau, were automobile insurance, homeowners insurance, health insurance, workers' comp, and life insurance, kind of in that order. As of December, there were 170 active investigations. In December of 2024, there were 200 referrals. So all of this work will continue and is continuing as the team is now situated at the BCA. I'll just close by saying that the work of the former Commerce Fraud Bureau, but also the broader financial crime section, is really complex, it's meaningful, and it plays a really important role in the state's consumer protection and criminal justice systems. So I will turn it over to my colleagues here to talk a little bit about the new unit, which also includes individuals from BCA, the work of the new unit, and the work that they'll do. I think it'll be really impactful for Minnesotans.
Commissioner Jacobson, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you so much, Chair O'Donnell, and again, Chair O'Driscoll, and again, you can call
it's
me
fair.
Anything you want.
It's fair.
This is fair now, right? And members of the Commerce Committee, I am Bob Jacobson, the Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, which includes the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I'm here today to talk about the importance of the newly created fraud unit at the BCA. Governor Walz created the new fraud unit to help protect state dollars, and I'm honored that it is now located at the Department of Public Safety. Minnesota is a state committed to helping people, and we're committed to providing services that improve the lives of Minnesotans. Fraud against these public programs is unacceptable. It is not a victimless crime, and it harms the same people we're trying to help with these services. Commissioner Arnold has said it many times before, the Commerce Fraud Bureau has done great work. They have great employees, they have unique skills and experience working on fraud. This new unit has combined those Commerce Fraud Bureau employees with agents and other staff at the BCA who currently work on fraud and white collar crime into one specialized unit. The section of over 40 FTEs will be the state fraud experts. They will not be asked to work homicide or drug cases, they will be asked to investigate fraud. We have heard concerns from legislators, the media, and the public about the problem of fraud in Minnesota. This unit will help address the problem, and I believe in our law enforcement and staff at the BCA to lead on this. So for more details on this new unit, I will turn it over to the BCA Superintendent Evans. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Superintendent Evans, if you would again go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And I believe you have a packet of slides that are in people's, slides that are in people's packets and in their materials for this morning. So with that, Commissioner, go ahead and introduce yourself and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and members of the committee. My name is Drew Evans. I'm Superintendent of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I'm going to move through these slides, but we left them all because we want to make sure we have time to answer any and all of your questions along the way. But part of this is we want to give you a little bit of an overview because we are new to your committee in terms of the work we do. And I know various members know detailed information about our work, but others do not as well. So as the commissioner noted, and this is in here just for you to see, just to give an overview of what came over as part of this, there are 27 FTEs ultimately that made the move over to the BCA that was completed on February 7th at that time. These are some of the relationships that they previously held. As the commissioner noted, and I think that you're tracking the tips, have looked at a fairly steady increase over the years, probably with a little bit of a blip, as all of us saw it during a time period there, for all of our casework and criminal-related matters, and now kind of getting back on the same trend line that they appear to have had over the last 10-plus years. As you know in your statute, and I think this is what's driven some of this concern, and I'll say right at the outset, we're very interested in working with everybody to ensure there are protections in place, that the work that the Commerce Fraud Bureau previously did remains a priority for that work. This new combined unit we'll talk about in a little bit, but it will continue to do the work that they've been doing, but the main priorities will be insurance fraud and the broad spectrum of what that means, wage theft and misclassification work that this unit has been doing, but so has the BCA. The Evergreen case that you saw charged out this week was a case that we investigated in partnership with both Stearns County and the Attorney General's office, and so it's a great complement of each other with the team combining in that process. Traditional financial crimes and then state program governance. Government fraud, which fits well within the work that they've previously done. The auto theft grant is moving over now. They're in the process right now. The Commerce Department did a great job of setting up a really robust program, and that work and that money has been really aiding law enforcement across the state to combat auto theft in Minnesota, and we will continue that great work. They audit those programs, and all the things that they've been doing will stay in place, and we will continue that work from there. The BCA, just for awareness, we're a state law enforcement agency that is, general criminal investigative responsibilities, but it's comprised of three large divisions. Our investigations division, which is our sworn law enforcement that this new section it resides within, the state forensic laboratory system that we operate across the state of Minnesota and do services for all 87 counties, and then MINJIS, which is Minnesota Justice Information Services. These are all the criminal data and records for the state of Minnesota that we house within the BCA. We are comprised, as noted, a statewide agency. We have field offices across the entire state. That's one of the opportunities that we have here, that the expectation is our agents assist headquarters agents across the state, wherever that may go. And those stars are where we currently have field offices in 13 locations, and then our Bemidji regional office. And some of you have heard we're in the process of seeking bonding to complete a Mankato regional forensic laboratory and office in that location. Our mission is to prevent, investigate, solve crimes in collaboration with our criminal justice partners, and so the work that Commerce Fraud Bureau has previously been doing certainly fits within the mission of what the BCA has done traditionally, and our vision is to deliver exceptional law enforcement services for a safer Minnesota. Our organizational chart I just would put in here in terms of I hear the concerns loud and clear when it comes to, a more generalized agency. I don't put this up as an chart test for all of you, and you can't see it in your packets. Those buckets are programs that we, work on every single day. And I've heard the concerns that you may lose importance for the work that when it moves over and the focus that we may have. But I will tell you each one of these buckets is of utmost importance, certainly to me and the people that work at the BCA. I certainly don't think we'd ever be accused of not caring about DNA, but it's one of those boxes of, 30 plus boxes that are on that chart that remains a focus every day. We have a robust structure in place to ensure that we have the appropriate attention to each one of these various responsibilities that we have as an organization. Our customers, generally speaking, are all of these people, the public, and certainly the insurance industry as part of this move is going to be an important stakeholder and customer for the work that we're doing. this is how we're generally aligned, and part of the reason I put this up here, I won't go through all the details, but each one of these are a section within our investigations division, and so part of this new unit, the financial crimes and fraud section that's now been created, are listed in here. It will be a standalone, singularly focused section that is the work and the only work that the agents and analysts that are assigned to that section will continue to do. So as financial crimes investigations, this is what we've previously been doing as our financial crimes, and this is where I think this is new to you in terms of what the BCA has traditionally done. Unemployment insurance work that we've been doing, we've had a partnership with DEED for a long period of time. We have agents that are assigned to Social Security Disability Insurance, that two agents and an analyst working with our federal partners and the Minnesota Disability Determination Office to recoup monies and hold those accountable for who those to wish to perpetrate fraud against those programs. Contracted agency, Department of Human Services, DEED, as I noted, and we just are wrapping up a contract with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency with some fraud that they encountered, holding some people accountable, and we've been able to work together with them to make sure that system is operating as they want it to see. And then other financial crimes, as I'm sure you've heard about in this committee, everything from identity theft, elder abuse, embezzlement, forgery, bank fraud, real broad spectrum of the financial crimes that we have worked traditionally in that. This is a little messy, so you might see it on yours. Part of what I want to just highlight, this is before the combination here. Then the number of cases, these are cases opened in 2024. As you can see, forgery and fraud related cases at the BCA were in the top five number of cases that we opened just last year previous to this. This again is a little bit messy, but we track the hours of each of our agents' work and analysts and what the work has done. I don't belabor the point, and again, it's a messy slide. I apologize for that. This is all the types of cases we work and the hours worked in a given year on this. And as you can see, fraud still remains a very high in the top five for the number of hours worked at the BCA, and that number will obviously increase with the new unit together. Our financial crimes, these are the cases that we worked in a particular year. But more importantly, and what you want to hear about today is what we've done. The executive order was signed by the governor, and the charge was that he asked us to do combine all available resources to combat insurance fraud, wage theft, and financial crimes, and then state program government fraud by combining the resources and expertise of the people that are already focused on this work across the state of Minnesota. That reorganization order, as noted, was effective February 7th, and what we are doing now is making sure that that team is operating smoothly as one cohesive unit. As we've talked about, any of these frauds are not a victimless crime. We gain efficiencies by having everybody together. We eliminate things like having to have separate systems for use of force, firearms, vehicles, infrastructure, all the different things that go along with that are required to run a law enforcement agency, which is becoming increasingly complex as we add additional responsibilities, duties to our law enforcement across Minnesota that everybody has to adhere to. And also align some of the things that there may be redundancies that we have between the two agencies to begin with, to be able to focus on the new approach from this unit. We'll improve that consistency and transparency, and we're very open to your committee. We know that we've heard the concerns in talking to some of you privately, and then certainly the insurance industry, and our commitment through this process is to make sure that we don't lose focus of what is important to you and previously to the Commerce Fraud Bureau, and the reporting that we know is going to be necessary to make sure that we are delivering on what we are telling you we will do with this unit. As noted, we already have 150 plus agents across the state of Minnesota today. I've heard concerns previously through this that these agents will be pulled in different directions to work on the other work that the BCA does in criminal investigations. They will not. If anything, they will have a bigger backstop when they need assistance with large sales search warrant execution across the state or a location to be able to provide that assistance on an ongoing basis. We have around 50 criminal intelligence analysts already at the BCA. So as you have natural things that happen with any staffing, people are out on leave, sick, parental leave, whatever it might be, we have other people that can step in and provide assistance along the way to lessen the impacts of when we do have turnover and some of those issues that are accounted with that. So we've been working, as noted, and focusing, the time that's been over the last month has been focusing on our new employees and that transition process to ensure that their needs are met, to make sure they understand what they're doing, and to make sure that they're not losing focus of the great work that they've done every single day. The same is for my staff as well. This isn't just moving the Commerce Fraud Bureau, it's changing the focus of our team as well to be able to work on all of those four buckets that we've talked about related to this new unit. And so they've been going through that process over the last week, as now that it's formed, training was occurring, familiarizing everybody with the BCA, but we've also had our staff from the BCA in the same training to be a resource, to form a team, but also to make sure that the items that the Commerce Fraud Bureau is traditionally focused on that they haven't focused on, they are learning about how to do that work as well, so that they're available to assist with that work. This will, as we noted, these buckets, we've been through them, as I don't mention auto theft, but that's the grant program, and that work will continue as well, and it will stay in this unit as part of that. So that is a brief overview from here. I know you have some other testifiers. Chair, happy to answer questions now or after the testimony, whatever the wish of the committee would be.
Just a programming note for folks. The commissioner, Superintendent Evans, you will not be able to be here for the entire time. You have some other obligations. If I'm not mistaken, is that correct?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and I apologize. I need to get up to Bemidji and back still today. At 9:30 is where I need to try to be out of here if at all possible.
And members, if there are additional questions and as we continue on, I assure you we will schedule additional time in this committee and invite those who have testified and others to come back. This is an extremely important issue to protect consumers against rising costs of premiums because of fraud. And as was mentioned by the commissioner, this is actually a sizable portion of these individuals are funded through assessments on insurance premiums in the state of Minnesota. And so the consumer, when they pay their annual premium, is expecting that those insurance claims and frauds are going to be tracked, are going to be investigated, and they're not going to be compromised by potentially mission creep in other areas. And in the way of full disclosure, when the commissioner or when the superintendent was with me, we talked about things. He mentioned that we may have to have some law changes, and I'm going to be very transparent, and I said maybe this entire thing should have been done by law changes in a conversation with this committee and not by an executive order. I have very definite opinions about why we need to keep this here and why it's good for the people in the state of Minnesota. Fraud drives up premiums. Representative Katiza Watuni, you have the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this my first question is for the superintendent, so I'm glad you're still able to join us for a little bit here. Could you speak more particularly about the efficiencies and redundancies that you mentioned? Just looking at the organizational chart, you mentioned that the financial crimes is going to be a whole separate unit off to the side of the professional services, investigative services. So just kind of wondering what that looks like going forward, and if there was some trimming of staff, if additional hiring was needed to kind of bulk up this department when we looked at combining the two units, and getting a little bit more clarity on that.
And who would you like to direct that question to, Representative Katiza Watuni?
I think the superintendent.
Maybe. Superintendent Evans, we'll take that one.
Yeah, Chair and Representative, I appreciate the question. So, running a law enforcement agency comes with a lot of logistical components, everything from all the training that's required to managing a fleet of vehicles, equipment, firearms, use of force training. There's a lot of training that goes along with the work that they're doing, facilities management. That has had to be done in many ways by the team itself. And so we manage that more centrally, and so that frees up time right out of the gate to be able to focus on insurance fraud. I hear the chair loud and clear. The focus is to make sure that we are protecting Minnesotans in all of the different programs that are here. The fraud is perpetrated against all Minnesotans on all of the different areas that they look at, and we certainly will ensure that we continue to focus on that. Also, there's redundancies in terms of the focus. We will make sure that the teams are aligned. There'll be four teams within this section. and to make sure that they're focused on the right components at the right time, meaning that from which team takes financial crimes, which takes and continues to focus on insurance fraud without losing any of the impact that they've been doing over time. There's also task force participation with our federal agencies that both of us had redundancies in that. We will make sure that we're best aligned to meet the mission and the protections that we need to have in place along the way. And the way I look at these, when you look at the number of people, it's not just people that are coming. It's the number of hours that are available and where those hours are spent across administrative tasks as opposed to investigative work that we need to do. And by combining together, that's how you do that. We did not have to hire people. They had a couple of vacancies that we're working on filling right now that were just natural vacancies that occur with any organization. The governor's budget recommendation does for this unit related to the state program fraud fund us to contract with the attorney's general's office so that we have a couple of attorneys that are assigned to this to provide assistance to the unit as a whole, but then also provide feedback in some of the work that they do so that we can improve programs along the way and be available to prosecute complex cases in greater Minnesota at the request of local prosecutors in those situations. And then one position that would be a forensic accountant dedicated to this work, which neither unit has previously had dedicated to do this work. As all of you know, that financial schemes are increasingly complex over time, which I think is reference why fraud continues to grow across a myriad of areas, and that's one of the reasons why. So those are the three positions contemplated in the governor's budget recommendations, but we have not had to hire additional staff. We're gaining those efficiencies by bringing them all together.
Representative Cattizo, to follow-up by Representative Davids, and our list is growing, so I do want folks to make sure that they're pointed with their questions.
Absolutely. Representative Cattizo. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one follow-up that I have, and it might be for the commissioner, just curious on capital recapture, and you know, as we prosecute these financial crimes, when and if we're clawing back any of the funds, do consumers see a direct impact on that? I mean, like, are we, you know, the financial payments or the increases in premiums that they are paying based upon the hits to the industry, if money is coming back in, money go back out to consumers?
Commissioner Arnold.
Yeah, Chair Driscoll and Representative Cattizo Wachoon. So the reason we say economic impact is because it's not so direct as getting back, you know, into as going back into people's pockets. What does happen is, you know, insurers will give us lower rate increases is probably the more likely thing. I'd love to see decreases, but I don't think we're there and probably won't be there for quite some time. But we would see lower rate increases because their assumptions of the amount of fraud are lower because they're seeing results from this team.
And one more follow-up.
Representative Cattizo-Tone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to kind of get a handle on that a little bit because I know that sometimes I think the general idea out in the public is that because this is industry fraud against businesses as opposed to fraud defrauding the government, that somehow it's not as big of a deal. Doesn't have as much direct impact on the taxpayers. And, you know, some of the things that we have done over the past couple of years, like embedding an office of the inspector general in multiple departments to catch internalized fraud and issues, and then this gathering efficiencies like this so that we can partner with industry and make sure that, on the whole, we're saving taxpayers funds and protecting consumers. I think this was really helpful to understand kind of how we're capturing some of that and moving forward, trying to make the process a little bit more streamlined. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before I go to Representative Davids, Representative Cattizo-Tune is the former vice chair of this committee, and the former chair is also a member of this committee. Last biennium, we were asked by the Department of Commerce to increase the number of agents and to increase collecting on surcharges on policies. And I don't think anyone anticipated what we're seeing today when that conversation was being held. And so that is part of the problem that I have and why I am very concerned about where this is heading. Since literally April and May of 2024, we were having this conversation, and on January 3rd, the first business day of the year, the executive order comes out. People have been talking about this has been contemplated for quite a long time. Why were we not advised of it as this committee until January? That is why we're having this hearing. We're having it early on, and we'll continue to dig into this if necessary. And again, I know you and I and Representative Stevenson and others were very concerned about this as that process was going through. So with that, Representative Davids, followed by Representative Hewitt.
Representative Davids. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a really, really bad idea. And hopefully we can, if we can't reverse it now, 2 years you'll be back saying get rid of this fraud units, put it back to Commerce where it belongs. This has nothing to do with consumer protection or increasing consumer protection. It's all about consumer protection. But this doesn't help or increase consumer protection one little bit. How many of the members around this table have had complaints about the Commerce Fraud Unit? Well, I never have. They are awesome. They do a good job, and they are right now where they belong in Commerce, or I guess not, because now they've been moved out. This idea is so bad that, okay, so it's an executive order. So the governor goes around everybody at this table, the legislature, and just does it. I don't remember having a hearing on this before. I didn't even see this one coming because it makes no sense at all. None. The insurance agency banks, they're paying for this stuff. And now we're going to put it over to CSI Miami. Really? Why are we doing this? There is no reason to do this. It's not about efficiencies. It's not about protection. I'm regulated by the Commerce Department, and you have just gutted Commissioner Arnold from being able to go after me. I'll tell you what, the fraud unit in Commerce scares the hell out of every insurance agent, every banker, and it should. Because it keeps us in line, and we know if we got bad actors out there, they're going to get nailed. And I want them nailed really hard. But now the fraud unit for insurance is going to be the poor step cousin in CSI Miami. Why are we doing this? Well, the governor and executive order. So we had nothing to say about it. It's a knee-jerk reaction on all the fraud issues plaguing the state. That's what it is. So the governor can say, oh, I did something. What did you do? You took something where there's no problems, none, and you're putting it so it can be the poor step cousin over in the BCA. That makes no sense. And yet the insurance companies get to pay for it. I don't see where that changes. So this is a solution in search of a problem. It really is. The Commerce Fraud Unit is amazing. And like I said, that's an area you don't want to go as a licensed professional. You just don't want to go there because bad things happen, and they should because some people are doing bad things. But now we have just gutted the commissioner, just gutted her, just taken it away from her and threw it over someplace so we can say we're doing something about fraud. That's all this is. We're just trying to be able to say, oh, we did something about fraud. Well, what'd you do? You moved a perfectly functioning agency out of Commerce. And you put nothing wrong with the BCA. I mean, the BCA is very good at what they do, but they should not be the insurance business or the banking business. They shouldn't be there. Banking and insurance is such an important part of this state's economy. They need their own units in Commerce. I think we can stop this. I think we can stop it. Never underestimate my sneakiness. Sneaky, sneaky. But now, when you go to national conferences and you talk about, you know, your fraud units, and we do talk about these like at NCOIL or different things over the years, you're going to say, well, Minnesota Commerce has no fraud unit. Really? I mean, this is just bizarre at best. And so, Mr. Chairman, I'm behind you 100%. We have to stop this. It's an executive order. Governor goes around the legislature. So the good thing about this executive order is now you can say nothing about all executive orders going on because you did it yourself. This is an executive order bypassing the will of the people, bypassing the legislature into an area where BCA does what BCA does. Commerce fraud, insurance fraud, banking fraud is now what the BCA does. That's Commerce. So members, as we go forward, this is just so sad. It's so sad. We're taking a unit out of Commerce that has worked so well. They've been so successful in what they do. And now, like I said, it's going over to CSI Miami or NCIS or wherever it's going. So we can watch people in the labs look at stuff on insurance fraud. So This is really, really bad. And so we have to stop it. I hope it's bipartisan. I hope you don't fall on the sword for an executive order that is not well thought out. He must have spent 5 minutes thinking about this. Oh, yeah, we got to combat fraud. Let's go combat fraud. We'll move a fraud unit to a different fraud unit. That solves the problem. No, it doesn't. It doesn't, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids, thank you for your comments. And I do believe that there's only two other states that have this model that's being contemplated here this morning. Otherwise, the rest of them do have it vested in their regulatory agency, in our case, the Department of Commerce.
Chair Driscoll, can I just comment on that?
Commissioner Arnold, absolutely.
So this is one thing that I think has been inaccurate in the conversation. So there are only two units where there is there are only 17 insurance departments that have licensed peace officers within their structures. So we were one of the 17 before, and now we are down to 16. So that's the strong minority. There are fraud areas within the rest, and then the two that you reference don't have anything that they sort of label fraud. They do that sort of middle bucket of not having licensed peace officers but having a fraud unit does a lot of what our insurance investigators do, which is to investigate something when it seems like it might be fraudulent, then to refer it over. So I think that's something that's important to make a distinction of. It's not a huge minority, but they're not all insurance departments have licensed peace officers as part of a fraud unit that do criminal prosecutions. Only 16 now do.
Representative Davids, follow up.
Yes,
and I'm going to ask it again to be brief because the list is growing with concerns by members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. To the commissioner, when were you notified that the governor is going to do this? And how much notice do you have? How much explanation did you have that he was going to gut your enforcement department?
Commissioner Arnold.
Chair Driscoll, Representative Davids, this has been something that I think has been, as many topics are in the organization of the department, it's been something that I was aware was an idea probably since I started, and I assume anything that I came to me when I started, I assume the idea predated me probably by some amount of time. So this is something that's not a new concept at all.
Well, thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chairman.
Representative Davids, I'm going to give you this, and then I got to move on.
It's certainly new to me, so I'm really impressed with the department being able to keep a secret that long. I never heard it until he did it, and I'm a former Commerce chair. And if I was the Commissioner of Commerce, I would be very angry right about this point that I just got smacked hard. And so now when you have a fraud issue, you can't go to your department and take care of it right away. You got to go to the BCA, and you get in line with everybody else that's over at the BCA. This is anti-consumer protection. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hewitt, followed by Representative Ryer. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and with all respect to Chair Davis and the chair of this committee, I'm going to look at this in a different approach. And first of all, Superintendent Evans, I have to thank you for the education you gave me and other legislators when you had us come over to the BCA and actually tour your facility. It gave me an overall understanding of what you do and what all the engagement is, and I encourage all legislators to take advantage of this. One of the things I've done in the last since I've been here, and all of you know about it, is the MS, the terrible report we got back from the auditor. The problems I had with that, there were so many issues with it, and fraud could have been one of them. It was real hard to find the departments that could take care of that. And when I looked, we have the AG with their own sworn officers, we have the Commerce Department with theirs, and then I'm like, well, who is their CLIO? CLIO is the law enforcement officer in charge, and I always had issues with this because realistically these sworn officers, and we have good people in the room right now that can correct me if I'm wrong, they need a chief law enforcement officer for their licensing. And I always had issues with that, and I never understood why they weren't at the BCA. It just always dazzled me because they really do have to report to a chief law enforcement officer that can check their work, that can hold them accountable, but yet it really is a pool to hold, you know, let's see if we're doing something. And then these players in these waste, fraud, and abuse cases usually aren't only doing waste, fraud, and abuse. They might be doing other things where, again, the BCA is that pool where it can look at different areas. I really think that this is going to work much better just in a law enforcement setting, and I'm having some reservations. I understand, Chair Davis, your concern as a licensed realtor. You never want that phone call. Never gotten one, but I never want one from them. But I really do think that this, in the law enforcement structure, really I would like to see more of our investigators centered at the BCA, because I think as a licensee, if you know the BCA is on this, you're going to be thinking twice about maybe going into your trust account or something. And so I really do, I get it, this was out of nowhere, but I have to say that the dog whistles have been sound already with waste, fraud, and abuse, and we put a committee together that we had to negotiate in our settlement. And so I want us to come together on this, because we have a problem in the state, and not to say that Commerce wasn't doing a good job, because obviously they were, but we got to raise this to the Red Bull level. I mean, this is a real big concern. I know of areas that I want to look at, and this is going to be great to have one place we can go. As much as we think there's not, when I found, when I was going through the audit that I dealt with the Emergency Medical Services Board, government has silos. Our state has silos, and they don't work together that well, and sometimes they don't want the embarrassment either.
Representative Hewitt.
Sorry. I'm just, I know it's a statement. I know, but.
And I do need to respond to some things that you've said in your comments.
Yep. Just Chair, I appreciate you giving me the leniency, so I'll stop now.
One thing I want to clarify that Representative Hewitt is talking about, none of this has to do with EMS. This is insurance fraud investigation. None of this has to do with real estate licensing or trust accounts. That's real estate, which is also under the purview of the Commerce Department. This is explicitly and solely on the Insurance Fraud Bureau that we're talking about. And I appreciate Representative Hewitt's passion on this, but for the clarity of the committee and for those that are listening, we are not in those other areas. We are not claiming that those areas are moving or being affected by this. We're talking specifically this morning about the Fraud Bureau within the Department of Commerce having been moved by executive order. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I come into this as a first-time member on this committee, and so I don't have a background of what we've been told and what we've heard. I also come in as the veteran of many, many corporate reorganizations. They are a mixed bag at best. Sometimes they do create genuine synergy, genuine efficiency. People thrive because they have more people like them to work with. And sometimes they're deck chair rearrangements. For me, the jury is still out on whether this is substantive or deck chairs, and that's what I want to know. So one of the areas of concern that I've been hearing is that we'll lose the focus of people really working on the areas that they're expert in. The insurance fraud and that whole area of accountability. And we're being assured that that won't happen. But what I would like to know is, how will we know? What tracking will there be? We've seen slides that have data from BCA Now and the previous agency. Those should come together. So what happens to response time? What happens to the outcomes people get? What's the consumer experience like? What volume is being covered? You talked about there would be less administrative time for the people with the professional expertise. How are you measuring that? And how much mission focus is increased? Because I also know we've heard all the reasons that this is good. I also know that when people do reviews of what's been done before in reorganizations, they go into it knowing there are downsides. You know, they go into it knowing that something is being lost and there's a trade-off that's being made, that the benefits are believed to outweigh the losses. So I would like to hear about how you're going to let us know, should this continue, how it's working and what you're really going to do and what you're concerned about, what you think is the challenge. Thank you.
Again, Representative Ryer, you'd like that question directed to any of the testifiers today, or did you have one in mind that you wanted to respond?
I think for the metrics and measurements, it is Mr. Evans. I think for what's being lost and the kind of the honest answer on that, it's all.
Okay. So, Superintendent Evans, we'll begin with you. And again, I'm going to ask the folks, as Superintendent Evans does need to leave. And again, I am very happy to take as much time on this topic as we need and to continue this at future meetings, because I think it is that important for the people in the state of Minnesota. But with that, Superintendent Evans, to Representative Ryer's question, please.
Chair O'Driscoll, Representative Ryer, I appreciate the question. I think it's a good question, and one we've been talking about with the industry as stakeholders and some of you individually. I will note, too, to Chair O'Driscoll's point, I am happy to meet individually with any member of this committee and answer any of your questions as much time as it takes, you know, either in committee or individually as well. The metrics that you're referencing, we've been thinking through those. You've seen some of the metrics all of us continue to track. I don't see any reason to change any of them. It does need to get combined into singular reporting, not only for hours, which haven't traditionally been tracked, we will be, in terms of what's being spent. When you ask about administrative time, we track the administrative time of every agent in the organization, from the supervisors on down. Same with the casework, and we've already been working through to even get more granular in terms of the types of cases that they're working on, in terms of tracking the hours of that they will. So it'll be very specific to what we're looking at to ensure that we're meeting the goals and the concerns that I've heard from all of you today. You know, the BCA is an incredibly complex organization. It's not a CSI organization. It covers a wide gamut of very difficult, complex, and we've delivered on that. And I'm confident we will deliver on what we're being asked to do here to take on a complex problem for the state of Minnesota and deliver on that. I also want to be clear, just so that we put a very clear point on this, that there will still remain in the Commerce Department, civil and regulatory oversight of the insurance industry. That part is not coming. So it's not getting in line. The criminal investigation work is what is coming over in insurance. And we will have a strong partnership and relationship with the Commerce civil and regulatory function that continues to go on, and the investigations that start and are worked there on that aspect of it. I do assure you that when the BCA is investigating a case, that people do pay attention. People are used to us working very large cases that result in significant criminal penalties for a wide variety of the work that we do day in, day out. I'll answer the downside from this. You know, it's a new unit coming together, and we need to make sure that people are functioning as a team. That's part of, when, you know, any change process, you need to be paying very detailed attention to the, you know, various, I believe actually fairly strongly in Cotter's 8 steps of change. And if anybody's familiar with it, that if you miss any of those steps in organizational realignment in any organization, it creates challenges. So we need to pay attention. I personally pay attention. I meet weekly with the special agent in charge of this unit that's coming over from Commerce Fraud Bureau, along with my deputy superintendent that oversees investigations, to mitigate any challenges that might arise through that process. And also some of the smaller things that they do and the expertise, we need to make sure that those continue and to pay attention. Really, that's the downside, is that really granular level, some of the items that they've been doing that frankly aren't insurance fraud, to make sure that we maintain those expertise for how that actually complements the work that's being done already that they've had, and we have the same expertise and the redundancies that have been created and exist between the two agencies.
Representative Ryer, I'm going to move to the Commissioner of Public Safety and then work my way back on your other questions. So, Representative Ryer, Commissioner Jacobson, do you recall the question that Representative Ryer, or did you want me to have her restate the question for you?
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. I think I understand the question is what are we losing in this transition, if I understand the content correctly. Back to Superintendent Evans' point, number one, the BCA is robust. We have a number of different units. They are very used to operating different units within the BCA, whether it be violent crime response unit, whether it be force investigation unit, whether it be human trafficking. So adding, you know, this fraud component, insurance fraud component, is not anything that's unusual, and I have full confidence in Superintendent Evans and his team to be able to make sure and manage and lead that very well. As you know, anytime you bring cultures together or different organizations, there is a challenge. It is to bring those back into a culture and to begin to build that together. And what we've done with this change is that we have spent a lot of time with Commerce and with the BCA agents who are becoming part of this new unit to make sure that we're spending time talking about how to do the work, trying to build some esprit de corps, trying to make sure that they are getting to know each other. And the challenge for them and for their leadership is to build something even better than what they've had before. This is up to our leadership. This is up to those that are coming over from Commerce to be able to build this unit. They are a part of this, and it really is an exciting opportunity for them to build on what they've been doing, find better ways to go about doing their business, and to make sure that we are serving all Minnesotans very well, including the insurance industry. And I think, as you have seen, the data that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension produces is going to be able to show you a tremendous amount of data about how we're going about doing the business and how we're going about doing the work. Whether or not we're a CSI, I've never watched it because I don't believe that anything I see on TV reference cop shows is probably true. So I do not spend any time with that. But I will tell you building culture is important. I'll also tell you that my experience as the Commissioner of Public Safety, I have done this. I have led culture change. A previous life, I was the Director of Public Safety for the City of New Brighton. And those of you that are familiar with public safety will know that a transition in pulling together police officers and firefighters into the same organization is probably as difficult of a challenge you will ever face. We did that in the City of New Brighton without a whole lot of notice. We started taking a look at it with the city manager in 2000, started talking about it in March, got the order to do it in August of 2000. We brought together 40 firefighters. We brought together about 30 police officers, created a brand new organization, the New Brighton Department of Public Safety. That organization has now thrived if you take a look at how they're doing business. They work together really well. They serve each other very well. They combine training like we're looking at here at the BCA. So we have a history, and I have a history of building culture within an organization to bring them together. So the negatives are certainly there. You have to handle it with care. You have to build a brand new culture. I have experience with that. Superintendent Evans has experience with that. We will do a good job in caring for those employees, and we'll make sure that they're doing the work that they're supposed to be doing.
Commissioner Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll and Representative Ryer. I think I'll take this on a couple different levels. I think at the agent level, frankly, they're losing a lot of administrative tasks because BCA has such amazing things that they can offer as part of being a larger unit. So I'm excited to be able to have them have more hours to work on cases. That was something that I didn't, once you get into the details of this, you sort of appreciate more things. And that was one thing that I really came to appreciate as we work through the details of the transfer is that we do have, we're a small organization. We have a small amount of law enforcement folks there. They manage their own fleet. They manage their own systems. And this is at the Commerce Fraud Bureau. And all of that will be centralized at BCA, which means that all the time that's being spent there will go to cases. I think that's excellent. I think that's a real gain. It's a loss for, I don't think they would consider it a loss, but technically it is. I think that the way that having the fraud, the criminal part and the civil part of the investigations under one structure is that the processes will need to change. I think Assistant Commissioner Olson and Superintendent Evans on my team have formed a really strong partnership through this process. And so they're thinking really thoughtfully about how we make sure that we don't lose anything in the process to make sure that our civil side investigations can still seamlessly transition over to our fraud, to the criminal side. And so that they can, I think our civil side can probably learn a little bit as the pool of expertise and other kinds of connections into broader crimes beyond just the financial crimes we've been dealing with. I suspect that we'll get a little bit of benefit there as we have kind of the back and forth flow of information. That's kind of the way that I've sort of watched the benefits come to reality in a very granular way. But also, over the long term, we do need to make sure we have a good partnership between the agencies, as we have for a long time. I mean, we've worked with the BCA, closely for a very long time. This changes the way that that works a little bit, but I have faith that we will be able to do it, and I know Superintendent Evans is committed to that, Assistant Commissioner Olson is as well.
Commissioner Evans, I'm not sure if there's much more to add on this, but we're going to, didn't mean to promote or demote you, however that might have come across. Superintendent Evans, I don't know if there's much more that you have to add specifically on Representative Ryer's question, but I will certainly give you the opportunity.
No, I think thank you, Chair Driscoll, and I appreciate the question, and I think they've answered it well. I think we just need to really pay close attention so that we don't lose in the process and that we acknowledge if there's a challenge along the way and that we adjust to make sure that we're meeting the needs that you all are so committed to in this committee and the work of the unit as a whole. And so they certainly can exist, but that's part of the process of managing complex organizational changes, of which, you know, as noted, I've had that a lot of experience. We formed a new violent crime reduction unit in the last year, 40 plus people that are currently operating out of a location that we started from scratch. We have experience doing this type of work, and they're very effective and very busy doing the work that they're doing right now.
Our next question comes from Representative Reimer, followed by Representative Cruz. Representative Reimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Evans, Commissioner Jacobson, I have the privilege of serving on both this committee and the Capital Investment Committee. And we had a conversation on Tuesday where we talked about, you came in and presented the dire need for certain facilities specifically related to investigative resources, office space. The picture that was painted at that meeting was a pretty dire picture, where we were talking about certain facilities having or needing north of $70 million in funding, and then there was about $90 million for State Highway Patrol. Given and I know you might tell me one has nothing to do with the other, but given that specific request and conversation that we had on Tuesday, what gives you the confidence that you can take on a brand new caseload while needing the current kind of investment in other investigative units? And then just one other kind of caveat to that question is, do you anticipate that you'll come back relatively quickly, potentially asking for more bonding money should we take on this?
Superintendent Evans.
Chair O'Driscoll and Representative Reimer, thank you. Very good question. Two totally separate issues, but it's a very good point, because traveling in different committees, what is the representative is referencing is a bonding request that's been a longstanding bonding request at this point to build a Mankato facility. They are unrelated. We've accounted for the space for this new team and how we're going to house them currently. They currently rent space in downtown St. Paul. We're reconfiguring all of our cubicles, a lot like we talked about the other day, down to be able to maximize the last remaining footprint in headquarters. But what it does represent, we will not be asking for any bonding money, I'll say that up front, to accommodate this new unit in any way. I don't anticipate that. What it does create over time is potentially an opportunity to have these individuals located throughout the state. They're all currently in St. Paul. And so we can look at these areas to have better service to the people across the state of Minnesota, to be located across our field office and regional office network work that we have in Minnesota. So there'll be no additional money, but it does represent a potential to be even structured better to meet the needs of our customers and stakeholders across the state.
Representative Reimer, follow-up?
Thank you. No.
Representative Cruzia, followed by Representative Stevenson. Representative Cruzia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the commissioners and superintendent for being here. So I just have three quick questions. My first one is, Mr. Chair, and I think this would probably be best answered by Superintendent Evans, but what subpoena processes will be changed between Commerce and the BCA in this.
Commissioner Evans.
Chair Driscoll and Representative, currently they issue subpoenas under the Commissioner's Delegate Authority from Commerce. The same availability will be for the same responsive information they need. The change will be that the Attorney General's office or a county attorney will issue the subpoena. We literally issue thousands and thousands and thousands of subpoenas a year through our other casework. So it will really represent a very minor adjustment. They will receive the same information they need. We've researched this issue in detail.
Representative Cruzia, follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the answer, Superintendent Evans. So I've noticed a couple things in the vernacular here, minor changes, this is thoughtful, this is usual. If that was the case, the governor would have come to this committee and bought our buy-in. Commissioner Jacobson said, and I'm sure you have a long history of culture and all that, you must also know that culture starts by getting a buy-in. You have no buy-in. You have a directive, and you are here shoving this down the committee's throat. Frankly, a buy-in would have helped this be a lot more successful. So my last two questions are, whose job is on the line for this being successful or non-successful? And the other one is, who gets to direct and prioritize the cases as they come through?
Mr. Chair. You wanted that to Superintendent Evans?
Whoever can best answer that.
I believe Superintendent Evans is probably the one, as has been noted, will be heading this up. So he's probably the person that can direct this, the answers to the committee. Superintendent Evans.
Sure, Chair O'Driscoll and Representative. Good questions in terms of this. I mean, I'd answer it a little bit differently. I take very personally the work that we do at the BCA, and the 800 or so women and men of the BCA take it very personal that they're there delivering on what they're asked. We often have the conversation with our staff that while it's a fairly large organization, there's not so many of them that Minnesotans shouldn't expect them to come in with their best every single day. Their loved one might be missing, they might be murdered, they might be a situation where fentanyl's trafficked into their community, and my expectation of every single one of our staff, and now with this new unit, they're showing up with their best foot forward every single day and deliver on those exceptional law enforcement services for a safer Minnesota. And so I take that personally and hold myself accountable, and certainly the commissioner and the governor's office holds me accountable to that as well in this process that we work through. There's, you know, human beings that are showing up every single day. They will make mistakes in that process. We're a learning organization. We're certainly not perfect, but when we do make mistakes or we need to adjust in the process, that we do that and make those adjustments to deliver the best services we possibly can for the state of Minnesota. When it comes to this, you know, particular unit and doing that every single day, it's doing the measurements and providing you that information and creating that buy-in in that process. Part of the reason that you're seeking, you know, the executive order did this is this has an immediate impact as opposed to waiting and forming a unit that could take 2+ years to form up by utilizing the skills and expertise of everybody to deliver on all of these missions. I hear you loud and clear, and I continue on to work with all of you to address what any concerns and needs might be so that we're delivering on the full mission set of this new section. Your question about who delivers the cases, the Commerce Fraud Bureau director that came over is the new special agent in charge of this unit. There's a supervisor that came from my unit and two supervisors from that previous unit that will be working together. They are the ones that will manage the caseload and make sure that we are adhering to that every day and then report up through me and through a deputy superintendent of investigations to ensure that we are making sure that focus remains what it should be. So he is in a position to really be able to see that, identify, and as I noted previously, we're meeting weekly right now to make sure that we do not lose sight of any of those mission sets that we're looking at along the way so that the caseload goes where it needs to be.
President McCreesh, follow-up?
Thank you. And Superintendent Evans, I appreciate that. There certainly is no personal animosity here. Here's my point. The governor has put us, because to your point, the cases that you investigate are our friends, they're our neighbors, they're our families, they're our law enforcement, they are our communities. And when you're needed, you're needed. And my point is this, the governor has put us in a position where you are in a very difficult position and we're in a position where we can't help you. The members that you have and the workers that you cited, I'm sure have the most integrity and they are the best they can be. But we are in a position where we can't give you better resources because of a spontaneous governor who has no foresight. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Creesha, thank you. And Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all of our testifiers. You know, the perspective that I bring to this issue comes first and foremost from my experience before I was at the legislature working as a prosecutor in Hennepin County, and I've worked with both the Commerce Fraud Bureau and the BCA in that capacity. And I want first to tell the committee from my perspective they're both excellent law enforcement agencies, and I've had very positive experiences working with both the BCA and the Commerce Fraud Bureau. The BCA I haven't had a chance to work with on white-collar issues in the past, but you know, the agents of the BCA, I think, operate with great professionality and do amazing work every day, and I have nothing but respect for the BCA. The Commerce Fraud Bureau, I think, is the gold standard for white-collar criminal investigation in the state of Minnesota, and I suspect far beyond the state of Minnesota. And I've been a longtime admirer of that agency. And in fact, when I had the opportunity to chair this committee it was a priority of mine to expand and support the work of the Commerce Rod Bureau in 22, I think. We increased their complement by 50% and expanded their jurisdiction, which I thought was really important because I thought there was a lot of white-collar work that they were in a unique position to do. I'm really proud of that and proud of the work that we did collaboratively across the aisle on that and with stakeholders to reach an agreement that addressed the really serious concerns that some folks had about insurance fraud not being meaningfully addressed if we expanded the jurisdiction and we reached a compromise that everyone could live with. And it's for that reason that I have a lot of concerns about this proposal, and that will not come as a surprise to the people sitting at this table who we've talked about this several times going actually back to 2022. I remember talking to Superintendent Evans about a similar idea about moving CFB over back then, and I was not a fan of that idea then, and I remain not a fan of that idea. And for some big reasons. One, I think white-collar crime generally, and I'm including in that not just insurance fraud, not just fraud of state government, but all sorts of white-collar crime, does not get the attention from the law enforcement community that it should get. And there's a lot of reasons for that. First of all, white-collar investigations are difficult. They take a lot longer. They're complex. They're hard. I can't tell you how many police reports I've read that, you know, someone's describing a fraud, and the officer says, "This sounds to me like a civil matter," you know, and that's kind of like, "Well, this is not something I really want to deal with," you know, is really how I interpret that comment. The cases are often multi-jurisdictional, you know, and so a fraud that has a victim in Minneapolis could be perpetrated by someone several counties over that could be victims in many different counties, which makes it a challenge for a local law enforcement agent to handle it. They require really specialized knowledge. All of these reasons are why it's so important to have a law enforcement agency that focuses specifically on white-collar crime. Commissioner Arnold knows that in 23 and 24, I tried to expand the Commerce Fraud Bureau again, and Commissioner said, you know, maybe let us catch our breath. You just increased the agency by 50%. Maybe we could let those people catch their breath. And that sounded reasonable to me. But I still would like to see more resources devoted to white-collar crime because it is an area that whenever there is a budgetary pressure, whenever there is something that's in the headlines, there is a tendency to divert attention away from white-collar crime and to that thing, particularly if that thing is violent crime. If there's a lot of murders and or sexual assaults, you know, that is where people want to put resources for reasons that are understandable, but white-collar crime is still important. It ruins lives. It's unfair and should still be addressed. And that fundamentally is the reason why I have a problem with this transfer, because we're taking the state's only law enforcement agency that only deals with white-collar crime and moving it inside a law enforcement agency that deals with all sorts of crime. And my concern is, I don't think under Superintendent Evans' watch, because he has expressed to me commitments on many times that he would not do this, and I take him at his word, but this is not a transfer that's only going to exist for a couple years. It's going to exist in perpetuity, and some future year, there's going to be some future you know, trend in crime or problem that people are going to want to address, and they're going to shift resources away from white-collar crime and towards this, and then we're going to continue to not do what we should be doing on insurance fraud, on wage theft, on all sorts of white-collar crime. So I think it's a mistake, and I don't think you actually need to take a leap of faith to believe what I'm telling you, because I actually think that what is happening right now is an example of this, because the Commerce Fraud Bureau today is not focused on fraud in state government. They're focused on insurance fraud and other white-collar crime, wage theft, and other things. And what we're choosing, and I think it's really important, and there should be a law enforcement response to fraud in state government when that occurs. It's a very serious thing. But that we're shifting resources away from these other types of white-collar crime to deal with this issue because there's an imperative to do so. What will be the imperative in 5 years? Will it be some narcotic issue? Will it be some violent crime issue? that causes us to move resources away from white-collar crime to that. To me, the best way to prevent that from happening is having it continue as an independent agency, and that's been my view. I disagree with this move, but it's also done. I mean, it has happened, and I respect that, and I'm interested in how we can move forward here to address these concerns that I think, from my conversations with the administration, they take seriously. I had a good conversation with Superintendent Evans and the commissioner and others a few weeks ago, and I understood that there would be proposals to address these concerns that I'm raising. And so I guess my question to the panel here is, do you have more details on what those proposals are in specific? And if you're not in a position to describe them today, when will you be in a position to describe them to us?
Representative Stevenson, we did have a presentation earlier today that there was a high-level discussion about some of those kinds of things. So I will ask them to maybe bring you up to speed on some of those and try to answer your question as well. And for a side note, I think I find myself in a very unique and awkward position in agreeing with you very, very much where the Venn diagram is overlapping here, which for the last 4 years hasn't always been the case. So those who are paying attention with your bingo cards at home, today is a monumental conversation that's happening in this committee. Thank you again for the question, Representative Stevenson. Superintendent Evans.
Chair O'Driscoll and Representative Stevenson, and I thank you for the conversations we previously had on this. And my commitment, certainly, to this committee is that we build into any framework that we need to statutorily to address your concerns beyond any of our time in state government. That remains that focus that we are more than welcoming to make sure that that's driven by statutory changes that provide those guardrails. I do want to say for this committee, because I think it's worth important in noting, I hear you loud and clear on violent crime becoming a focus. You know, we were asked at the BCA that led to the Violent Crime Reduction Unit being formed to reassign 10 agents full-time to the city of Minneapolis and did really incredible work to bring down violent crime at that time and continue to work with them. I will tell this committee, I didn't move one financial crimes investigator. I didn't take anybody from our financial crimes unit. It was important then, it remains important to us now, and it will into the future. I recognize the question, though, is that may not be me. It might be a different superintendent, might do that going forward, and I've seen that in other agencies. And I agree with everything you said, that there needs to be a focus and a greater focus. White collar crime, the insurance and wage theft that we're doing. Before you got here today, we noted that large wage theft case that was just announced last week at the Attorney General's office. It's a BCA case, totally unrelated to this, that was underway for a long time previous to this. And I didn't mention it here today, but we have a human trafficking investigators task force that also does labor trafficking work that will complement and work very well together with this, with the wage theft work that's being done by this unit that will continue, and then be able to enhance the resources that will be available to the financial crimes and frauds section. So in terms of your question, we're happy to provide that information. The way we've been thinking about it for the whole committee is to provide statutory protections of the funding and the money that goes to those particular investigations to ensure that it has. And we have a long history of doing this at the Department of Public Safety. State Patrol has specific funding. I have specific funding that can be used for nothing other than the intended purpose to give you that oversight. And then reporting that we're more than happy to report back to this committee of all the work that we do so that there's an accountability built in so that you can hold us accountable if we stray from that in the process.
Superintendent Evans, I know that we're coming up to the time that you need to leave today, and I want to, on the record, thank you for your time with today. And again, as I mentioned at the onset of this is not the only time we're going to have this conversation in this committee, I'm sure, and we will invite you back in the future as the need arises. And I know that I'm also going to ask Commissioners Arnold and Jacobson to answer Representative Stevenson's question, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to stay because Representative Stevenson is the last question I have for you at this time, and then we're going to bring folks from the industry, and I would like to have you available as the commissioners to be able to respond as well. But at this point, I'm going to go to Commissioner Arnold to respond to Representative Stevenson's question. Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll. Representative Stevenson, I think you were asking about, there are a number of things. So first of all, I think that the compliment to the Commerce Fraud Bureau as the gold standard, I think is really great. I think it's also important to know that this is one thing that I've learned through my time at the Commerce Department. There are people who know the Commerce Department really know who the Commerce Department are, to Representative David's point. People who don't. And so having that gold standard available to more Minnesotans, I think more Minnesotans know who the BCA is than know who the Commerce Department is. And I think that that is a benefit to all Minnesotans. And so I'm really glad that that gold standard gets to be able to be shared kind of broadly. And then I think representing, I didn't mean to give you that kind of title change. Superintendent Evans answered the question about the legislative pieces.
And Commissioner Jacobson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, our commitment is that we will continue to do insurance fraud work. We'll continue to do the fraud work that that team has been assigned and expected to do. Again, back to the culture change piece, we are asking and directing and trying to grow that culture within the new unit. Again, that is their focus. That's what they want to do. That's what we want them to do. We want them to do this work. There is plenty of other things that are happening around the state of Minnesota. We have others that are focused on doing that, including the Violent Crime Response Unit and others. But again, the BCA is really well equipped to compartmentalize those issues, and in this case, to focus on the fraud unit. There's also a question about who ultimately is responsible for this, and I think the question was who's going to lose their job. I just wanted to make it clear, if anybody is going to lose their job over this or is responsible ultimately for this, it's me. Superintendent Evans is carrying out the work that he's been asked to do. Ultimately, if you don't feel and we don't feel that the work is being done correctly, I take great pride in what I do as a commissioner as well. But I also am never hesitant, and those of you that have seen me in front of committees before, I am never hesitant to take responsibility for anything that we have not done the way that we should. So my commitment is to be as involved as I possibly can in this process to ensure that we're doing the work that we're supposed to do on all levels. And ultimately, it is my responsibility to make sure that this is done right. And if I fail, I will happily give up my job. But I will tell you, this is my fifth job since my first retirement. I keep coming back. I know. But the reason I keep coming back is because I have a commitment to public service. I have a commitment to doing this right. I have a commitment now to the Department of Public Safety and those that we serve, including everyone in the state of Minnesota, to do this job right. And we will lead this. We will help build that culture change. We will take care of the staff that's coming over. We are bringing them into the Department of Public Safety with open arms. We will take care of them. I know this was this process took some people by surprise. I completely understand that, but it's now my responsibility to take that assignment, to do it right, and to make sure that we are taking care of business and doing it the right way. But ultimately, I'm responsible. I give you my commitment to doing it right. If I don't, I will happily go off into my sixth job, whatever that may take me to. So thank you.
Representative Stevenson, follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, thank you for your comments about agreeing with us. I just want to assure you it scares me as much as it scares you.
Thank you.
I do appreciate the work that you and I have done together on this and several other issues in the past. And I also want to apologize to the committee if I asked people to repeat things that were said before I got here. I had another meeting I had to be at for a bit. And I did appreciate the commitment to bring forward statutory changes and protections. And I'm looking forward to seeing those. The follow-up question is, when can we expect to see that language?
Would you like that, Representative Stevenson, to the transport public safety commissioner?
I think to the public safety commissioner.
Commissioner Jacobson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. Those changes are in process. I can give you a better answer after we've had some time to regroup with our team. Again, our commitment is to get those to you and bring those forward as soon as we possibly can. And again, to continue to have discussions, as we bring forward any suggestions or ideas, we look forward to working with all of you. This is an open a beginning to the discussion. Many of you I have not met before, but we are always open to questions or suggestions or new approaches on how we're doing this work, including any legislative suggestions.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just finally, I just comment that I appreciate that, and I appreciate that we'll see something in the relative near future. I, you know, of course, I don't think I need to tell you that the legislative session is short. That's probably a feature to you, a bug to us. But, you know, with deadlines, you know, not being that far off, I really hope that we see that language in the very near future. I think a number of us on the committee are probably uncomfortable with the idea of leaving the session without addressing our concerns here. And if we don't have a proposal from the administration, then we're left to come up with our own ideas. And, you know, we're a dangerous crew, I think. So thank you.
Representative Stevenson, our ideas are always much better than the administration's ideas. Certainly you're aware of that. We have one last question for Representative Allen, and then, commissioners, I have a couple of just follow-ups for myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question going out to anybody that can answer it. I'm just kind of wondering, what kind of downtime are you looking at? It would appear that the ship has sailed and has left the dock, and everybody else is still trying to figure out what is exactly happening at this point. How much downtime are you expecting your team to have before they're up and operational, or has this already happened and moved?
Mr. Jacobson.
Yeah, Commissioner O'Driscoll, members of the committee, we have already begun the work. They are already meeting. They've already been going through that transition. They are getting assignments. I'm not not in so far into the details on existing cases right now, but that team is coming together. And I think part of the goal of all of this is that knowing that fraud is an issue in the state of Minnesota and that we need to get this team up and running as quickly as possible.
Representative Allen, follow-up.
Thank you for that. It's as critical as fraud is and white-collar crime is. I was happy to hear what Representative Stevenson was saying. I do agree with you with the importance of this and it getting up and running as quickly as possible. I was just wondering, are you going to be inviting, I don't know if I got the email or missed the email in terms of tours you guys were doing here a few weeks back. It would be nice to get an invite for that to be able to see exactly what's currently going on within BCA.
Commissioner Jacobson.
Yeah, Chair O'Driscoll, it would be our honor to host anyone that would like to do that. We'll make sure that we get out invitations along with contact information to members of this committee so that you can come and tour the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I think, again, we have a lot of pride in that organization and what they do, and I think it would certainly be beneficial for all of you to see the facility and to talk to the people that are responsible for doing this work. So we'll make sure and get that information to you.
Thank you, Commissioner. And my questions are going to be really to the commissioner that's within the purview of this committee, which is Commissioner Arnold. Commissioner Arnold, as I was listening to the testimony today and from other folks and your testimony, the thought occurred to me that, you know, you had said that this has been contemplated for a while. It was contemplated before you were the commissioner and it's been around. The question I have is, who initiated the conversation now that generated the January 3rd executive order?
Chair O'Driscoll, so I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but I think that, you know, the conversation around how we're attacking fraud in the state, like regardless of whether it's state fraud or private sector fraud, has been going on for, you know, a long time. It has increased, I think, in part on the public side. Certainly we've seen a number of cases that have warranted a lot of attention. But on the private sector side, I've also been hearing that from our insurance companies and our banks. And so this kind of like need to focus and really think about the way that we're most wisely using taxpayer dollars to focus or insurance, you know, taxpayer dollars at the end of the day, whether or not they're paying it through their insurance premium or through their taxes, is, I think, you know, this is sort of the moment to really be stepping up to make sure that we are actually using state resources as efficiently as possible to attack the fraud that's happening in the private sector and in the public sector.
Thank you for that answer, Commissioner. Why then in the last couple of years, as Representative Stevenson had talked about, we were growing the Fraud Investigation Bureau and the work that we've done the last year, was this not brought to the committee to talk about this move? And we learned about it by executive order. What triggered that? What was the turning point from not having had conversation with the commission about, and the committee about this, And then all of a sudden, here comes the executive order. That's the part that I'm just not being able to wrap my head around.
Sure, Chair Driscoll, thanks for the question. So I think that we've had a number of conversations about, certainly Representative Stevenson and I have had a number of conversations about the Fraud Bureau over the last several years. We've also had a number of conversations, and I don't want to speak for Commissioner Jacobson, but I know in their committees they've had conversations about ways to put the right resources toward the need that exists. And so that conversation has been ongoing for quite some time. As we look at, you know, a little different financial picture than we have previously, and you know, a real kind of need to focus, then that's sort of where we're getting, you know, what I think will be a real benefit to Minnesotans, which is a new unit to focus on all kinds of financial crimes. And I don't want to speak for Commissioner Jacobson, but I know that they've had conversations in previous times about, you know, making sure that they also have the resources that they need to combat fraud and financial crimes.
Commissioner, before we bring the folks from the industry up and have them provide testimony, just one final question. Did you make the recommendation to the governor that this move should be made?
Sure, Chair O'Driscoll, thanks for the question. Together, we made the recommendation to the governor.
Thank you, commissioners, for your testimony today. With that, we're going to bring up Mr. Aaron Cocking from the Insurance Federation to talk about the background and to answer some private sector questions and provide private sector background on this. Mr. Cocking, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Aaron Cocking. I'm the president and CEO of the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. The Insurance Federation represents the property and casualty insurance industry in Minnesota, and you'll likely see me before this committee quite a bit over the next 2 years. So the Insurance Federation has a long history with the Commerce Fraud Bureau, as we were instrumental in its creation. In January 1997, then Attorney General Hubert Humphrey wrote a letter to my predecessor, Bob Johnson, expressing his strong support for the IFM's efforts to establish an insurance strike force, an insurance fraud strike force within the Attorney General's office. At that time, Attorney General Humphrey recognized the significant cost that insurance fraud was imposing on Minnesotans, estimating in 1997 that it was costing the state $1.5 billion annually. So in 1997, the insurance fraud strike force was born, and it later became the Commerce Fraud Bureau when Governor Pawlenty signed legislation formalizing that transition in 2004. And I would note making a conscious decision to place this unit within the purview of the insurance regulator of the state. Since then, the Commerce Fraud Bureau has done exceptional work investigating insurance fraud in Minnesota, and we certainly commend them for their efforts. Now, in 2023, following a report from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, the legislature expanded the CFB's responsibility to include other financial crimes. Representative Stevenson played a pivotal role in this change. And it's important to note that insurance industry funds the work of the CFB through these state-mandated assessments. So last year, when our industry's assessments were doubled to ensure adequate funding for the Bureau, we did not object. We support these efforts because we understand the importance of combating fraud. Now, as we move into this new landscape, it's crucial that we maintain the core mission of the Commerce Fraud Bureau, investigating and prosecuting insurance fraud. Regardless of where the Bureau is located, the focus of the investigators must remain solely on insurance fraud. The law is clear on this. Investigating insurance fraud is the Commerce Fraud Bureau's mission. We must ensure that insurance fraud does not become deprioritized in favor of other financial crimes. Now, I've spoken with both Commissioner Arnold and Superintendent Evans, and Superintendent Evans has assured me that the core mission of the CFB will remain unchanged. And this assurance is important because we know that insurance fraud is a critical consumer issue. According to the National Insurance Crime Bureau and the FBI, fraud-related costs add between $400 and $700 annually to the cost of insurance for each household. And this is why historically the IFM has worked so closely with the Commerce Fraud Bureau. And as an aside, I have to agree with what Representative Stevenson said about the conversations I've had with Superintendent Evans. I take Superintendent Evans at his word when he says that nothing is going to change under his purview. The fear we have is when we get 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, and Superintendent Evans is no longer in that position, does the importance and the work of the Commerce Fraud Bureau investigating and pursuing insurance fraud remain? So the Insurance Federation of Minnesota believes that it is essential to maintain the focus on insurance fraud, and we hope that the Bureau's transition to the BCA will enhance its ability to serve the public without compromising its mission. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to take any questions from the committee.
Mr. Cocking, thank you for being here today and providing some perspective from the industry on this. My question to you to get started with this, because you, Representative Stevens, and I have some history on this, as he has outlined and you've outlined. Had you and others in the industry been brought to the table at the time that prior to the executive order and the end of last session when the funding and the number of agents had been doubled? Were you at the table? Were you invited in to talk about how that might affect the industry? Or just tell us what happened maybe from the end of May until January 30th. I realize it's a long time, but keep it narrow to this particular topic of insurance.
Mr. Chairman, I can keep it very narrow. I found out about this move an hour before the executive order was released on January 3rd.
So, Mr. Cocking, I found out about the order around 9:30. You may have actually found out it before I did, as one of the upcoming co-chairs of the committee. So congratulations, you may have found out about it earlier than I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, we'll fight over who knew first or who knew last. I would say that going back on our history, I think the frustration that we've had on this is just having been so instrumental in this, in its inception in the 90s, the formation over into Commerce in the early 2000s, the work that our member companies had done, not only in standing up that initial funding willingly within the Attorney General's office, but providing our special investigation units within the realm of our insurers to get these Commerce Fraud Bureau agents in a number of instances trained. And then this happens without any input from our standpoint, I think was incredibly frustrating.
Well, Mr. Cocking, I know from our conversations last year and as this issue was coming up, you were hesitant about the funding source and what was going to happen and how these additional agents were going to be deployed within the mission of the insurance fraud that they're charged with, and that there was a comfort level that was reached at that point. Do you feel that, well, I don't know quite how to put this, but that you came forward and you thought one thing, but then all of a sudden there's a different shift and in that short period of time that maybe there was some conversation and that we didn't have the whole part and you didn't have the whole part as the industry?
Mr. Chair, possibly. I mean, I think that we've always engaged in good faith on this because we know, it's been referred to repeatedly as the gold standard. We would certainly agree with that. I mean, the Commerce Fraud Bureau has done incredible work, which is why over the years we have been willing to increase the assessments that we pay. When we doubled them last year, I think Chair Stevenson referenced, there was no opposition from us on the doubling of those because the commissioner said they needed these additional resources to properly fund these agents. Never got any hesitation from us on doing that.
Mr. Cocking, again, in the big picture of this, one of the things that you and I have talked about and others have talked to me is they're worried about the mission creep, and both the Commissioner of Public Safety and the Superintendent said it wouldn't happen. However, I think that the point in the comments that were made by Representative Stevenson are extremely valid, that there are constantly going to be different waves of crime and different priorities, and people will be tapped on the shoulder to do double duty or to divide those agents. Is it fair to the industry, and is it fair to the people who pay premiums to the insurance companies that they should be expected to have a divided, even at any point in time, mission from these people based on what statute says?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I necessarily want to wander into the realm of fairness. I think that historically we have been treated or this has not always been fair. There have been instances in the 2000s during, you know, budget deficits in which the legislature has poached out of the Commerce Fraud Bureau, out of the Auto Theft Prevention Academy, looking for it. I mean, so we're kind of, you know, some of that is taken away. I'll go back to what I said, though, when you talked about the mission creep, and I think that's one of the biggest concerns that we have. And I've committed both to Superintendent Evans and to Commissioner Arnold that I'll give them the benefit of the doubt on where we're at now, because we're down this path. I mean, this move has happened already. But that when Commissioner Arnold is no longer the Commissioner of Commerce, and when Superintendent Evans is no longer the Superintendent of the BCA, and when Commissioner Jacobson is no longer in his role, what do their successors do? They haven't sat around and testified up here about how they view the Commerce Fraud Bureau. There was a specific reason why in 2004 we put this within the Commerce Fraud Bureau in the Department of Commerce, because it makes complete sense that the regulator of the business of insurance is handling the fraud investigations. I think Representative Stevenson hit the nail on the head when he talked about the likelihood that, you know, 5 years from now, we're going to see that mission creep when some other major, you know, crime spree wave, whatever you want to call it, happens. And there's this group of agents doing something that most people in the state don't recognize exists. What happens then?
You know, going back to when Skip Humphrey was the Attorney General some 35 years ago on here to today, Representative Davis asks, is anyone, as members, 20 members of the legislature in the House, have any of you had any complaints from consumers about the Fraud Bureau? Zero, null, right? My concern is that something is working extremely well, it's being moved, and that when, I'm going to add to the list, when Representative Stevenson isn't here anymore, when Aaron Cocking isn't here anymore, when Tim O'Driscoll isn't here anymore, right? And then it's going to be,
I'll still be.
Greg Davis may still be here.
He's probably the only person here who remembers the creation of that insurance fraud strike force in 1997.
I'm almost sure that he was here on, you know, the day that the state became the state, too. I'm not 100% sure, but.
This is glorious.
But my point in all seriousness on this is, you're getting into an issue where it's somewhat, our form of government is somewhat adversarial for a reason, to try to get the very best outcome for the people that are the governed, right? So if we don't have something in place, if we don't have the guardrails up here, it could be, well, I promise you I'll give you reports. Then the report comes late. The report doesn't come at all. There's a new chair. There's a new lead. There's a new, you know, over in the Senate, same thing. And there's people who kind of forget about these things. And my fear is that 5 years from now, somebody's going to come with a bill, and they're going to go, you know what we need to do? We need to put some folks in the Department of Commerce who can specifically be dedicated to investigating fraud. And now we've got dual purposes out here. That is the problem when you take out of the ecosystem the regulator, the committee. Now we're going to have two different committees that are going to be involved in this, because the BCA is under public safety and commerce is under the Commerce Committee. And we're taking out and gutting one of the biggest tools that this agency has. And Representative Stevenson, and his other job, prosecutes people who do bad things. And I'm not speaking for Representative Stevenson when I say this, but I'm making a blanket statement that criminals are smart. People who break the law are smart. Not all of them. But if they see that there's an area to wedge in here because the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing because they're two different areas, I don't think fraud goes down. I think fraud goes up. That's my personal opinion. You can respond to that if you want, Mr. Cocking, but I am very concern about where things are going based on our conversations and what this committee has done and this legislature has done over the last several years. Mr. Cocking.
I'll just offer a brief response, Mr. Chairman, which is, I think the earlier group that was up here did a good job of highlighting this, but I think the important part we come back to, the reason that we should care so much about insurance fraud is because we all pay for it. And we talked about that before, but that's a key component of why the state has such an interest in making sure that fraud is addressed. Because if it's able to grow, I mean, I know that I've heard from many in this room, I know that there is a frustration around insurance premiums right now and what they're caught in all of this, and there's a number of different solutions. But one of the things that can help address that is cracking down and dealing with insurance fraud. That is the lowest hanging fruit of some of the things that we should be focused on.
My final thought on here, and then I'm going to turn it over for the final thoughts to lead her. In addition to the conversation that we're having, for those of you who are newer members to this committee, last year we also put in statute some additional provisions to try to, in statute, reduce the amount of fraud that occurs. If we want to call them storm chasers, about the fact that you're going to have to put out and have an estimate that you have to give a consumer before you can do work, and you cannot act as their adjuster to the insurance company. The reason this was done, the number one underlying reason we're here today, the fraud that occurs. And I'm concerned that if you aren't in part of the whole ecosystem, that when these complaints come in, you're maybe going to go, yeah, not this one today, not this one today, we're going to do this. Because there's not an inside understanding, because the regulator knows the enforcement division has to be a part of what the regulator does. 100%. Mic drop. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. I appreciate the conversation today. You know, I didn't ask any questions because I had already individually met with Commissioner Arnold and Superintendent Evans. I also had meetings with labor, industry, and partners who all care about this issue, and I did get a chance to tour the BCA. Because I don't have the history that most people do here, I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments because I do, this was one of the first issues that came in front of me as the co-chair in Commerce here. And I would say that, you know, I know we've talked a lot about executive orders, and I know we've seen a lot of these at the federal level, which sometimes I don't think we often question, but I think this is also very similar, and then I think that this is within the governor's right to do so. But does that mean that that was the correct political thing to do, right? I mean, a lot of people put a lot of work into this, and it was very thoughtful, and that when we take actions, in this way, that it is actually really detrimental to relationships, especially for those who are going to continue to make legislation that will impact Department of Commerce and potentially the BCA. And so I just wanted to make sure that I, you know, that we do state that it doesn't mean that necessarily, right, it's judgment of who believes is right or who is wrong. But I think that politically it was the wrong move, and it does hurt relationships. I will just say that it was really important for me to also understand, because the analytical part of me sort of kicks in, and I wanted to understand at the federal level, right, how do we address white-collar crimes? And, you know, insurance fraud does fall under the purview of the FBI, which then would seem very consistent with this. You know, securities, the SEC oversees securities and investment fraud, which makes sense. And so I think that maybe some of this alignment logically makes sense. But I also understand that when we are a smaller entity than the federal government, that there are really important aspects of this that could be lost in this movement. And so I just wanted to say that I agree with Chair Stevenson that I'm also looking forward to the legislation that Commissioner Jacobson mentioned. I think it is important to protect CFB, and I look forward to continuing to work with everyone on trying to find the best solution forward, because I think it is important for us to balance both what is legally we can do versus politically, like what is the right thing for us to do. And we've seen sort of the things that have come at us at the federal level, which politically is not the right thing to do, but we continue to push that, and I don't want us as a state to go down that same path. So that's my comment for today. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Representative Herr. And members, thank you for the discussion, and again, thank you to the commissioners. Mr. Cocking, programming note again, there were two other testifiers that were on who had notified us that they would like to speak of the matter in the future, if there's going to be legislation and a bill that this committee is taking up to talk about that issue. And the other piece of administrative business for today is the minutes from our meeting from yesterday, the 12th of February. Representative Hewitt, have you had a chance again to review those minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have, and so moved.
Representative Hewitt moves the minutes from February 12th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. We
Chair, I just one quick question.
Go ahead, Representative Herr.
Chair, can you just maybe provide us a roadmap for next week? I hear a tradition that I want to make sure I continue.
I sort of think you might have been coached by somebody else around this table about how that works. I'm so glad you asked that question, says the chair, as he reads his script from many, many years. We do have a roadmap for next week, and Representative Herr and Representative Stevenson, you will appreciate my answer. Stay tuned. We do have some things that are coming up for next. But I can tell you that we will not be meeting on Tuesday. Wednesday, we will be meeting to discuss reinsurance for the benefit of the committee, what's currently being done, what are the things that are being contemplated, what are some other options that folks are talking, very much a working session like this so that the committee can get information to be able to make the best decision possible. And again, as I said, stay tuned for upcoming things for the latter part of the week. Representative Stevenson, did I properly do that?
Mr. Chair, I thought that was excellent. Nicely done.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And with that, we are adjourned.